The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
The Rio Grande Valley, consisting of the four southernmost counties in Texas, has had its fair share of long-running mysteries. Perhaps the most known, or at least the case that received the most national media attention, is the 1960s sexual assault, beating, and suffocation death of second-grade teacher and former beauty queen Irene Garza in McAllen, whose case went unsolved for over a half century until Father John Bernard Feight was arrested in 2016 and eventually convicted of her murder at age 85. A lesser-known mystery, the savage murder of 23-year-old Candy Mora, stabbed to death in Harlingen in 1973, was as brutal and senseless as Irene Garza's slaying. Candy's killer, though, has never faced justice. And in 1984, another mystery was born in Mercedes, Texas. And though the city wasn't necessarily immune to criminal activity, nonviolent crimes such as burglary and theft were relatively commonplace. And, though less so, violent crime wasn't unheard of either. The disappearance of a young wife and mother, however, was undoubtedly unusual. Clues, some immediate and some that emerged in the following years, were scant and some bizarre, and the question of what exactly happened that October day in 1984 remains unanswered to this day. Mercedes, Texas, in Hidalgo County, is among the state's southernmost cities. It sits in the Rio Grande Valley, about 8 miles from the Texas-Mexico border. Its history is rich, going back to 1790, when a rancher was given a land grant by the Spanish government to settle there. Over the following century, much of the area's ranching land switched hands a few times. And in the early 20th century, a local land developer named Lon C. Hill Jr. saw potential in the then modestly populated community and began clearing the land for development, naming it Lonsboro. The town, though there is some dispute about this, would go through 3 more name changes before finally settling on Mercedes sometime around 1904. The town became known as the Sweetheart of the Branch. It was the first town on a particular branch of the St. Louis, Brownsville, and Mexico Railway. The Rio Grande Company, who owned most of the land in Mercedes at that point, began an extensive publicity campaign to lure companies to the area, and by 1907, citrus crops and grape cultivation moved in. Followed by a newspaper, The Enterprise, a branch of the Hidalgo County Bank, a school, and a lumberyard, among others, in 1908. And Mercedes was officially incorporated as a Texas town in 1909. The town grew at a modest pace until World War I, when a total of somewhere around 15,000 soldiers moved into Camp Mercedes and Camp Llano Grande, just southeast of town. After the war, the population took a nosedive back down to just a few thousand, though, and by the 1950s, Mercedes would hit just over 10,000, where it would hover for the next few decades. By the 1980s, Mercedes had amassed an impressive number of businesses, considering the stagnant population. Agriculture, meat packing, chemical manufacturing, and cotton among them. On Sunday, February 14th, 1982, Valentine's Day, Sweethearts Kim Sue Scourge and Mark Leggett, a Rio Grande Valley farmer, tied the knot in Mercedes. Kim was born to Sharon and Daryl Scourge in Colorado in 1962, where she'd also grow up. But after her mother and father divorced in the 70s, her mother remarried and relocated Kim and her brother to Texas, where Sharon's new husband, Air Force pilot and World War II hero, Marvin Lee Lefty Gardner, had started a crop dusting business, Lefty Gardner Flyers. Newlyweds Kim and Mark were doing well together. Kim began attending college at Pan American University in Edinburgh, though good news the couple would receive not long after marrying put a hold on Kim's academics. A year and a half after Kim and Mark married, in September of 1983, they welcomed a baby boy into their lives. After Mark and Kim got settled with their new addition, Kim re-enrolled in school, this time at Texas Southmost College, about 40 miles away in Brownsville, attending classes on Tuesday and Thursday evenings, studying to be an X-ray technician. She kept a day job, too, working at Ross Cotton Gin. At work, Kim was responsible for both secretarial and bookkeeping duties. Ross Cotton Gin, where cotton fibers were separated from the cotton seeds, belonged to Kim's husband's stepfather, a business that had been handed down to him from his father. The gin was located on Mercedes' north side. Sometime around 10 or 11 a.m., on Tuesday, October 9th, 1984, Kim called her mother, Sharon, from work to ask if she could babysit her and Mark's son, Randall, while she went to class. Sharon and Lefty, though, had an event to attend, so Kim would have to call her regular sitter. The conversation was normal. Up to that point, the day itself was uneventful and mundane, and Sharon had no idea that it would be the last time she'd ever talk to her daughter. Kim Leggett assisted a customer at 4:30 p.m. that day, helping him weigh a load of cotton he'd brought. But by 5 p.m., when another customer came by Ross Cotton Gin with a truckload, Kim was nowhere to be found. Between these two times, at about 4:45 p.m., at Kim's mother's house, the phone rang. Sharon answered the phone, and a man who she'd later describe as very polite, very soft-spoken, began speaking. "They've taken your daughter. They want money," the man said, asking to speak with Lefty, Sharon's husband and Kim's stepfather. "Can you tell me who's calling?" Sharon asked him. Without an answer, though, the man hung up. The phone began ringing again just seconds later. "Lefty, you answer it because it's probably the person who just hung up," Sharon said to her husband. He picked up the phone. The man on the other end, presumably the same man, repeated what he'd told Sharon, that they were kidnapping his daughter and that they wanted money. "Surely," Lefty thought, "this is some kind of a gag. We're not really paying very much for girls these days," he told the caller, and the call ended. Sharon, though, wasn't so sure that the soft-spoken, polite man was joking. In fact, her gut was telling her the opposite. So she quickly phoned Ross Cotton Gin, where Kim should have been, working her shift, and no one answered. Lefty quickly enlisted the couple's neighbor and headed straight to the cotton gin. Kim's car was there, school books, keys, and her purse inside. The cotton gin's office door was open, and inside, on Kim's desk, sat an open textbook, a pencil, and a calculator, which was on. Signs of life, signs that she had recently been there, but Kim was nowhere to be found. Police were contacted shortly thereafter, but from the beginning, two facts hindered their investigation. Number one, there were no signs of forced entry, no signs of a struggle, and no immediately apparent evidence left behind on the scene. And Kim's mother, Sharon, was adamant that Kim wouldn't have gone easily if her daughter were being physically forced to go with strangers, saying, quote, She was a very strong-minded individual. She was a fighter and would not have gone peacefully. It's like she disappeared into thin air. It's plausible, though, that coercion with a weapon, a firearm in particular, would have lessened Kim's fight. Either way, there was another problem. The Mercedes Police Department and the Hidalgo County Sheriff's Office had little to no experience with an investigation of this kind. Although the first days of the investigation didn't turn out much at all, another clue emerged when Sharon and Lefty, Kim's mother and stepfather, received a letter in the mail a few days after she vanished. It was a ransom note, and though the contents of the envelope, the actual note, is thought to be Kim's handwriting, the envelope itself, the written address, was written by someone else's hand. The letter asked for a ransom of $250,000. There's little doubt that Sharon and Lefty were doing well for themselves, but the amount, which is equal to well over $500,000 in 2019 money, was exorbitant. And though it seems likely that the ransom note and the calls to Sharon and Lefty's home the day Kim disappeared were from the same person or persons, it's never been definitively proven. There may have been no way to tell. Sharon later described that caller as a nice-sounding young Anglo man, and also later said that the caller had no accent, but it's unclear exactly what that means, if it meant that his accent was Southern or Texan and normal to them and the area, or if he had no Southern or Texas accent at all. The letter was the last communication Kim's parents ever received from, by all indications, whoever kidnapped her daughter. A partial fingerprint was found on the envelope, and it, too, provided no leads. Early on, police discovered two witnesses who'd seen Kim Leggett outside the Ross Cotton Gin around the time she went missing, speaking with two men as they drove past. They stood talking next to Kim's car, the witnesses said, and parked nearby was another car, which was white, that they remembered as a sports car, but couldn't be sure. It's reported that both witnesses, however, said they weren't paying enough attention to the scene, that it didn't seem like anything out of the ordinary, so they couldn't give police good descriptions of either man they saw. On Monday, October 15th, 1984, just 6 days since Kim Leggett was last seen, and after the few lines of investigation they had dried up, the Mercedes police chief told a reporter, "We have run out of leads." Meanwhile, adding confusion to the case, the Hidalgo County Sheriff's Office was investigating a break-in at the home Kim and Mark Leggett shared, presumably to determine if it was related to Kim's disappearance, though they never publicly announced what their findings were, or whether or not they even thought there was a link in the first place. Missing persons flyers featuring the 21-year-old, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, 5'6" tall, 110-pound mother with a scar on her chin were distributed to homes and businesses in the area. Kim's boss at the Cotton Gin, W.C. Buddy Ross, stepped in and offered a $10,000 reward for information leading to his daughter-in-law's safe return. And by November 10th, 1984, over a month after Kim vanished, the reward had grown to $30,000. The days had turned to months, and the following year, on April 29th, 1985, almost 7 months since Kim was last seen, a television special called Missing, Have You Seen This Person?, hosted by Meredith Baxter, an incredibly popular actor at the time, largely due to her role on the sitcom Family Ties, aired the story of Kim Leggett's disappearance. Kim's segment was only 10 minutes, but the response was huge. Both the Crime Stoppers anonymous hotline and the Mercedes Police Department's phones were ringing off the hook, beginning immediately following Kim's segment on the program, and lasting until the early morning hours of the next day. We've received so much response, over 60 calls in the first few hours. It's going to take up more than a month to follow up each and every call. We hope the calls will turn into leads, Mercedes Police Lieutenant Ray Campos told a reporter. The department was happily overwhelmed. Previous leads had all been exhausted, diminishing incrementally week after week, month after month. Unfortunately, the calls did not lead to where Kim Leggett was, nothing to indicate whether she was alive or had met a terrible fate. Even with the help of FBI agents and Texas Rangers investigators, both of who had joined Mercedes Police and Hidalgo County Sheriff's investigators long before the television program aired, about a week after the disappearance, Kim's whereabouts and what exactly took place remained elusive. Kim's husband, Mark Leggett, and his family were forced to deal with another tragedy 13 months after Kim vanished, when his great aunt, Augusta Sterling, who was in her 80s at the time, left her home for a walk and never returned. Speculation mounted a bit as the media reported that Kim and Mark's great aunt were close, perhaps in an attempt to sensationalize the story, but according to Mark's brother, they in fact were not close and might have never even met. Augusta Sterling's disappearance, though, didn't receive much media attention. She, like Kim, has never been found. It could be her, and it could be a couple of 100,000 other people. The bones seem to have originated in the county. Mercedes Police Chief John L. Pape told a reporter for the McAllen Monitor, upon the discovery of a skull and other bones mixed in with a load of topsoil that was delivered to a Mercedes man at his home on Iowa Avenue. It was the second week of March 1987, 2.5 years after Kim Leggett was last seen, vanishing without a trace from her place of employment, Ross Cotton Gin, on October 9, 1984. The bones were turned over to the Hidalgo County Sheriff's Office for analysis, and on March 12, 1987, it was determined that they were male, and he was likely middle-aged and Hispanic. Another dead end. And with virtually no clues, coming up with potential suspects, too, proved to be nearly impossible. But police, as well as the public, managed to theorize. Over the course of the investigation, law enforcement and locals alike mostly focused on two individuals close to Kim Leggett, her husband, Mark Leggett, and her stepfather, Lefty Gardner. The theory that materialized concerning Lefty seemed like it was born out of desperation. It was a stretch, to say the least, and didn't implicate him as the perpetrator, rather, it centered around his work as a pilot and his membership in the Confederate Air Force, now known as the Commemorative Air Force. Some thought that because Gardner refused to smuggle contraband to and from Mexico, Kim, his stepdaughter, was taken and killed. There isn't any evidence, however, to support that theory. The evidence that Kim Leggett's husband, Mark, was involved in her abduction and disappearance holds little weight. The evidence, little more than an outside character evaluation, a mixing up of the facts, and judgment of his movements after his wife vanished. When Mark filed for divorce and remarried 2 years after Kim's disappearance, after being left to care for a 1-year-old boy on his own, he became solidified in some folks' minds as the individual who was responsible, but that's not where the suspicion started. Mark and Kim's babysitter claims that he told her husband about his wife's disappearance before anyone else, her husband accompanying Mark to his friend's house upon the news to pick up the friend instead of heading straight to the cotton gin. It's unclear how that's evidence that he was involved in any way, as opposed to simply gathering friends for support and help. The friend he went to pick up that day was the cousin of the woman who would become his wife 2 years later, adding, of course, to suspicion. But Mark hadn't even met the woman when Kim disappeared. Mark Leggett fully cooperated with authorities, and other than a news report that sensationalized and exaggerated his status as a person of interest by claiming he was breaking a silence he maintained for years, which he had not, according to those close to the case, and by editing out any footage that portrayed his deep sense of loss. Nothing but speculation has ever surfaced against him. The talk of the town, too, was that Mark Leggett knew too much about his wife's disappearance, but no one seems to be able to provide examples or proof of that. He told a Rio Grande Valley news station in 2008, "Hidalgo County was completely willing to lock me in jail to say they've solved something." Mark Leggett's family says that he agreed to speak with the news reporter for News Channel 5 off the record, but that they secretly recorded him. Retired Mercedes Police Department investigator Jamie Vasquez told a reporter in 2008, "I think that the case was overwhelming for them," he said, referring to Mercedes PD. "Had they just, from the very beginning, called the feds in, we might not be having this interview," he added. Kim Leggett's case was the one that kept Vasquez up at night. "I used to keep Kim in a box. Everything that had to do with her sat in my office, in my home. I worked on it in my own time," he told the media. That year, a story on Kim Leggett's disappearance, 24 years after she was last seen, seemed to be the most movement the public and the families were aware of for many years. Law enforcement told the media that they were closer than ever to solving the case, and that they'd recently reclassified the case as an open homicide investigation. They believed that Kim met with foul play and was murdered. Authorities continued to remain mum on exactly what new information they'd come across. The FBI came to Kim's family with requests that they submit DNA samples. They'd recently taken possession of all the evidence, including photographs, recordings, presumably of persons of interest interrogations, and the ransom letter. The FBI took the evidence and asked local authorities to cease their investigation because they were closer than ever, they said, to solving Kim Leggett's disappearance, saying that they were close to an arrest. The family's hopes were up as well, believing arrests were imminent and that answers were coming. Composite sketches made in 1985, too, were released publicly for the first time. The drawings were developed through interviews with the witnesses who'd seen Kim Leggett speaking with two men outside the cotton gin around the time she vanished. It was reported that the witnesses couldn't give descriptions back in 1984, though, so it is unclear whether that was a purposely misleading police tactic or if the sketches are virtually meaningless. Kim's family also came forward with a twofold reward, totaling $100,000, $50,000 for information leading to her remains, and $50,000 for information leading to an arrest. In 2009, just after the reward was offered, a woman, who asked her identity not be revealed, came forward. "She didn't go to Mexico. She didn't go to another country. She was here in the valley all along," the woman told the press, claiming to know the fate Kim met. "They knew her, and they knew that her family had money," the woman continued. She claimed that men she knew from a Harlingen gym had abducted Kim, taking her to a house in a secluded area where they called her parents, Sharon and Lefty. After Lefty took the call as a joke and hung up on the men, they became frustrated and intended to hold Kim until the money was paid. but they got scared that they'd be found out if they continued to keep her, the woman said. So they killed her, dismembered her body, and put the body parts in a canal, coming back years later to remove the bones and place them somewhere else. Well, I mean, it's kind of stunning to listen to, and if it's real, I just hope that law enforcement could prove it, Kim's brother, Darren, told the press. Law enforcement commented that they'd interviewed the woman and the individuals she claimed kidnapped and killed Kim Leggett, but that her story doesn't work. That was over 10 years ago at the time of this recording, and no arrests have been made. The case went cold again, but warmed back up a couple years later when promising movement came again beginning in 2010, when the ransom letter and the envelope were sent to laboratories for DNA extraction and testing. The results led nowhere. The case went cold again, where it remains today, in 2019. I'd answer the phone, and I'd hear a baby crying in the background saying, "I want my mommy, I want my mommy," and it just tears your heart out. Kim's mother, Sharon Gardner, said, speaking of the phone calls she'd receive over the years, some from callers unknown, perhaps heartless pranksters. Bizarre postcards about Kim or pretending to be her from within and outside the United States, too, showed up from time to time. Sharon already thought of her daughter on a constant basis, and the strange calls, letters, and her obsessively peering into ditches and canals for Kim's remains were too much to bear. She left Mercedes and the Rio Grande Valley. I don't think there's a day that goes by that something doesn't pop into my head. I wonder what Kim would think of this. I wonder what she'd be doing at this point, Sharon told a reporter in 2009. 25 years of living with the everyday uncertainty and questions, not to mention pain, as if every new day is simply a repeat of the last. The family had a memorial service for Kim, and though there was no body to be buried, a magnolia tree was planted in her memory and a marker placed in a church courtyard in Travis County, near Austin. I don't know if it's frustrating or just heartbreaking. There's just nothing that will ever mend my heart. It's just broken. No matter how much faith I have and how I pray about it, it's still broken, Sharon said. Everybody would like to know what happened. Everybody would like to find closure with it and figure out what happened that day. Kim's brother, Darren, also told a reporter in 2009, adding, "Because there is no closure, it brings more hurt than anything by bringing it up in a family setting. I just don't think it was a random act to stop at a gin that was in the off season and look for someone to kidnap," he continued. "I'm positive somebody out there, somewhere, knows what happened." Retired Mercedes Police Department investigator Jamie Vasquez agreed. "Someone out there has information on this case," Vasquez said. If you have any information about the disappearance of Kim Sue Leggett, please contact the Mercedes Police Department at 956-565-3102 or Texas Crime Stoppers at 800-252-8477. The Brownsville Herald, the McAllen Monitor, the Sonoma Press Democrat, the Longview News Journal, the Victoria Advocate, the Del Rio News Herald, the Charlie Project, KRVG News, and Web Sleuths were used as sources for this episode. If you'd like to support Gone Cold, Texas True Crime, you can do so by donating at patreon.com patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. There are several varying donation levels to choose from, with perks to go along with each, including ad-free listening at all levels. Donations help us cover the costs of research and production, and we can't thank y'all enough for your support. Thanks for listening, y'all.